Welcome to another edition of the Monday Roughing the Passer podcast. It's a strange feeling. I'm in this room by myself. Brady Quinn is on location for assignment in New York. And Pat Kerwin, you're not here either. Nobody's here. It's just me.
You can anchor the fort, Pete. You're tough enough.
I can ask questions and not have Brady's making faces at me all the time today.
Is that what happens, Pete? I'm always making faces at you?
Yeah, you're cringing. You cringe when you guys gang up on me. This is going to be a much different podcast. By the way, Brady, we didn't have you on the previews this week, but we did make it. You know, we did the Cleveland Browns San Francisco 49er preview, and Pat made a pick, and I made a pick, and then Pat, tell them what happened. There was no pick for Brady.
We waited. There was a silent pause there. We were just waiting and waiting. Finally, we were told, no, Brady can't make it. Congratulations, you're doing the game. But I did say, you know, Pete wanted me to be nasty, but I couldn't
No.
But I said, Phil Sims, I talk to Phil every Saturday before his Sunday game and every Wednesday before his Thursday games. He always tells me who he likes. So I'm pretty sure when I ask you personally, as your friend, you'll tell me who you like.
Oh, 100%. I would tell both you and Pete, you know, who I think will win this matchup, especially once I have more time to break down film this week. But things are going to change now since there is news that Johnny Manziel is going to be back into the starting role for the last quarter of the season. So we'll see how that plays out because I think he brings more of that dynamic ability to scramble and get outside the pocket compared to Austin Davis and even Josh McCown for that matter.
Hey, Brady, that's good for you. You know, in the world of what's good for me is good for me, that game was like kind of a little, had nothing really going for it. And now that Manziel's playing, that's good for you, right? I mean, that gives some focus to your game this week.
Yeah, and you know what else is good for me, too, is the fact that I've been kind of on this Blaine Gabbert bandwagon, Pete, and you really haven't, although he's the guy that he wasn't a game manager. You know, he actually led them to the victory last week, you know, a big run for the touchdown, first in his career. I think it was like 44 yards or something like that. Big touchdown pass to Torrey Smith in overtime. I mean, Blaine Gabbert's a completely different quarterback than who you covered in Jacksonville.
Oh, I don't think there's any question about it. And I think, you know, we talked about this a lot last week about who's sitting and learning. And he was, you know, look, when he went in there, he had all the tools. The guy had a cannon for an arm. He was a big, but he didn't, I don't think he put the work in. Now he put the work in and you're seeing the results. I mean, that game the other day made a nice throw. He's not putting up huge numbers, but he made a nice throw against Chicago to win it in overtime. And he made a, you know, nice play with his feet and shows his athletic ability. And Pat, you're the one who mentioned Steve Young and how he had troubles when you were with in Tampa, and then you went to San Francisco and learned. I mean, this guy might be one of those guys that's going to get better as he sat back and learned the position from sitting and watching.
First off, I said I'm stronger than that on this guy. I would get him on under contract right now. I wouldn't wait any longer. Doesn't mean he's the only guy I'd have there, but I would do something. I got to ask Brady. Brady, when you see the likes of a Gabbert and this what appears to be a reinvention of his career. And so do you ever sit back yourself and say, I just wish I crossed paths with the right guy for me? No, because you had a lot of talent. And I look and go, you know, Richie Gannon and I talk about it a lot. Maybe he's the best example. I mean, he actually was out of football and came back and then and gets to the MVP of the league. How do you feel when you see these guys getting these rebirths?
Well, It's all timing and circumstance. You know, I was actually with a quarterback named Gerard Johnson in Seattle for a little bit of time during the offseason. And, you know, he had an outstanding year at Texas A&M that kind of, you know, pushed him into the spotlight. And I think he started to get some NFL looks. And then all of a sudden, he kind of, as he got injured, then he kind of lost out to Ryan Tannehill. And, you know, as he started to get looks once he got to the NFL level, he had an opportunity to talk to Mike Tomlin. And Mike Tomlin kind of said that because it's all about timing and circumstance for quarterbacks. And for me, I think it was a combination of things. You know, I think I got injured at kind of some inopportune times. Yeah. And I never felt like I really got to play a lot of football under, you know, a different coordinator. I only had two games or two starts with Rob Chudzinski at the very beginning of my career. And then besides that, I had Brian Daboll as my offensive coordinator in Cleveland and then in Kansas City. So that was where, yeah, I think the question you're asking, it always looms in my head, you know, what would it have been like had I been able to work with a different offensive coordinator, whether that be a Rob Chudzinski again, who's now calling plays for the Indianapolis Colts or anywhere else. I mean, you look at Jeep Chris and the job he's doing up in San Francisco. So, yeah, there's definitely that thought process that always goes through the back of your mind, and not only necessarily with coaches, but also with talent, the guys you're throwing to. I mean, you go back to 2009, you know, we got rid of Kellen Winslow before that season. They traded Braylon Edwards 3 weeks into it. All of a sudden, you're throwing it to second-round picks and rookies, and you're going, how are we going to be able to match up on a week-to-week basis with some of the best cornerbacks and the best defenses in the AFC North? When you don't have much experience and many guys where you can really rely on.
Brady, give me a guy that you didn't get the chance to work with that you think would have been very conducive to you having being a better quarterback in the National Football League. I know you watch a lot of football now and you've looked back and when you play, but is there a guy you say, boy, if I only had the opportunity to play for that guy?
Josh McDaniels. I mean, I was there. I never got the chance to actually play during the regular season. You know, he traded for me. And 12 games in, he got fired. You know, so even in my time working with him, Adam Gase. I mean, the next year, Adam Gase would be another great example. I mean, both of those guys, you know, you combined kind of their football IQ and their knowledge and their scheme with the talent we had. I mean, man, that would have been a dream come true, and especially when you had a defense that was playing very similar to how they're playing right now, one of the top defenses in the league, if not the top.
Pat, tell me if you agree with this, and I ripped Josh McDaniels to death when he was the head coach, but I think the second time around, when he doesn't get the power that he had in Denver, that he's going to be a successful head coach.
Well, yes, because I have a pretty strong belief in rebound coaches, and I got plenty of examples of guys. Pete Carroll fired twice with me in New York, then New England. Belichick, we can go down to Coughlin. Guys, smart guys learn something from the first time around. I'll never forget the first night that Belichick, he was our head coach at the Jets for about 3 weeks prior to the arrival of Parcells. And I remember sitting in his office the first night and I saying, well, you ready for this? And I'm thinking this is his second chance because I wasn't sure we were going to get Parcells. And he said, man, I learned a lot in Cleveland. I learned a lot about what to do more of. And he said, tonight as an example, I'm going to a hockey game. I'm going to be out there in front and see people. And that's how it was for Pete. And that's how it is for a bunch of guys. Jack Del Rio, he learned a bunch. And people always look at the first stop. When you got fired, half the time people thought you deserved to be fired. But so most of the guys I know learn something and they move on to the next job and they do two things. They correct their bad behavior, and they put someone near them that they trust to keep them on course so they don't steer off into the way they were once before. So I think there's always a chance, and I've always fascinated by quarterbacks because I'm with Brady. The circumstances, and that includes ownership, coaches, players, has so much to do with your ability to hit it right and be on the right spot. So I just think about it a lot, you know. Richie Gannon, as I said earlier, nobody has a longer tail of bouncing around. And even when he played good in Kansas City, they showed him the door anyway for Elvis Gerback. It didn't matter, and he just had to keep trying until he got to Gruden. But it takes a lot to keep bouncing around the league and being out for a while and not losing faith in yourself. I'm fascinated by that whole trip that guys get on. And I was always interested in asking Brady about it. And I do think Blaine Gabbert, I don't want to overrate him, but I think the guy has a chance right now to become a pretty good player. I would definitely put him under contract.
Yeah, I want to piggyback off that real quick, Pat, in two ways. One, I think something that always gets overlooked, and Pete, I don't know how you're going to react to this, but I would think that you could probably relate. You know, when you go through a bad circumstance early on in your career, It sometimes is incredibly difficult to kind of build back that confidence in your game, whether that's through an injury or poor play. That's one of the toughest things. And you almost, as a quarterback, when you go into games, you can get through, you know, maybe if you didn't feel like you had prepared quite as much or you're going against a tough defense, you didn't have as many guys to throw to and all that. If you felt confident in your abilities, I always felt like that was one of the biggest, you know, differences going into a game on a week-to-week basis. And I think for Blaine Gabbert, it's been a matter of him building back his confidence to not caring about what anyone else says on the outside, because there's a lot of people who have said he can't play, he's terrible. Why did the 49ers give up a six-round pick for this guy? All this stuff that he probably had to deal with and hear. And now he's the guy and the reason why they win a game versus the Bears last week, which is it's pretty remarkable because we see the physical and what's happening, But I also think it's the mental side of it and how he's been able to overcome a lot of the noise on the outside and probably maybe a lack of confidence in himself at some point. And then the other thing, you know, Pat, that you mentioned, Josh McDaniels and I actually sat down after that season. And I just kind of had a talk with him. And I said, hey, you know, what was the plan and what was the thinking and all this stuff? Because I was curious, you know, where he saw me moving forward, you know, what his unbiased opinion of me was, considering he wasn't the coach there anymore. And I still had another year under contract with the Broncos. And, you know, we kind of talked and discussed a bunch of things. But one that we both talked about was he was like, you know, I've got to figure out, you know, what the things I did wrong and how I can become better for that next opportunity when I get it. And I have to make sure that when I do get that next opportunity, it's the right situation. And after going through all this now, I know what to look for. And it was kind of the same thing for me. Like I had never been with a different team. But then once I signed in free agency with the Chiefs and kind of went through that whole experience, I was like, man, if someone could just give me another opportunity, I feel like I would be that much better, not only as a player, because I feel like I've continued to grow, but also I knew the things to kind of look for, you know, to not have such a, you know, a terrible, you know, season and all that. Like I'd been through enough situations where I kind of knew the warning signs, I knew what to look for, and I feel like I had a pretty good idea of how it could help kind of turn the tides and like keep us, you know, from falling apart halfway through the season.
Hey Pat, you mentioned something just before about coaches getting a second chance and how you think that, you know, they learn a lot from the first time and sometimes they're better off the second time, and a lot of times they're better off the second time. I'm going to give you a coach who was this is a pretty good record for seven seasons, right? 66-46, four double-digit winning seasons in seven. That's pretty good. That's impressive, right?
Very good.
How come nobody's mentioning Mike Smith anymore?
You know, I talked to Mike when he was walking out the door, and he said to me, I'm going up to a house on a big mountain with the old you'll see is my mailbox, and I'm just going to chill. And I recognized personally why that's a good idea. Now, a year or two into that, which is about now, you know, the itch could come back where he wants to, and he's so well respected as a defensive guy. He can make the calls if he wants to get back in as a defensive coordinator, and someone will be interested in talking to him. But I know at the very end, he was burned out. And I remember how I felt after 10 years of it and New York and four different head coaches in a five-year period. I was not ready, and I didn't want it. And then along came this media thing for me, and I was excited to never go back. And I could have with a couple guys. But when Mike was talking to me, and I shared with Mike how I felt, and he put his arm around me and goes, man, you understand. So I think, you know, a year or two away, John Fox did it. When he walked out of Oakland, he stayed out of it for a year or two. And, you know, sooner or later, you just go, I can't play any more golf. And then you got to go coach again.
Yeah, and another thing with him and you know, is that he's not represented by the big guys. He's not represented by, and you guys know this now, you've been around it long enough, that there are certain agents that represent coaches who, you know, quid pro quo help out guys in the industry, and then it comes back to them and they help them out in turn by putting their guys out in list and propping them up. And owners, as strange, and you know this, Pat, as strange as that sounds, owners pay attention to that stuff.
Well, Bob Lamont is, and I know Bob very well, and I know how many guys are lined up with Bob, and a lot of times when a guy gets bounced, in a short period of time, he can reposition his fired coach with one of his head coaches. But at the end of the day, some of that is extremely effective to get you back into the assistant world. But I think a guy like Mike, personally, Mike Smith, I think Mike can get back in through the coaches themselves. All that guy has to do, and he doesn't have to show up at the Senior Bowl, he doesn't have to go to the combine, he just needs to make a couple calls and tell the guys, I'm kind of feeling I'm ready. If I was Mike, I would wait another year. I wouldn't rush right back into it unless he feels great about jumping back in.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic because he, you know, I think he wants to be a head coach again, and he's not on any list whatsoever, none, zero.
And I would say it to him, you know, you have two choices here. And the quarterback world and the player world is a bit of a parallel here. But I remember when Pete's fired by the Patriots, second firing. So he was staying with me a lot. We hung out. We had nothing to do. I was basically scratching the surface of the media. So we spent a lot of time together, usually up at my lake house, just sitting here talking for days on end sometimes. And I just said, Pete, if you want to reinvent yourself, the other option is college. The other option is to go and take on a college challenge. And then all of a sudden, if you're successful there, the NFL experience is a plus. They won't be saying you were fired twice. They're going to say you're a college coach with NFL head coaching experience. And that sentence is a whole lot different than trying to get a guy a third job. Here's the new proud, Jim Mora. Jim's fired in Atlanta. Jim's fired in Seattle. Jim's at UCLA. Sooner or later, and if we have eight firings this year, someone's going to look at Jim Mora's resume, and the Atlanta-Seattle thing is going to be a plus, no longer a minus.
Yeah, that's strange the way that works. All right, let's talk about some games from the past weekend. I'm going to sit here and say this, and I said it on the previews, and I'm going to say
hold
this.
On, Brady, get ready.
Ready?
Please be seated.
Russell Wilson is playing great football from the pocket. Okay? There. Let me say it again. Russell Wilson is playing great football from the pocket. You guys are astounded that I'm even saying that, right, Brady?
Well, no, we were wrong is what you
Russell.
Were. I know you have a hard time saying that, Pete.
No, I can admit when I'm wrong. I can admit when I'm wrong.
And this is what I've been trying to tell you is he's got all the capabilities of doing this. It's just a matter of them trying to find, you know, get back in sync. And I think part of the issue was, you know, trying to work Jimmy Graham into that system. They tried to do it with Percy Harvin. It kind of didn't work. They tried to do it with Jimmy Graham. That wasn't working. And now they're back to, again, utilizing the talent that they have, the foundation that they've already built with Daryl Bevel and all that. And they're utilizing that style of passing game as well as, you know, a solid running game, whether that's Thomas Rawls, Marshawn Lynch, or whoever.
How much is not having Marshawn Lynch helping him, Pat? You know better than most people because you're close to that team. A lot of people are theorizing that with Lynch gone, now it's Wilson's team 100%, and he's taking it and running with it.
Well, I think Russell had the personality. I know he has the personality that he was always able to let Marshawn be Marshawn. And all that stuff about who they wanted for Super Bowl MVP, all that was fabricated crap, really. I think he was fine. You know, he totally appreciates what Marshawn did for basically 2 years. He just rammed into people and forced people to play run defense. I think if Marshawn were to have a resurgence, if he came back healthy, no one knows if that's ever going to happen. I suspect this is his last year no matter what. But if he came back, I think he'd be fine with him in the huddle. I mean, that guy presents problems to defenses. In the meantime, he's very good with Rawls, and Brady could answer this, but to me, Russell seems to get them in very good plays. He knows when and where to run the ball. Check with me, run game stuff is good. And I think Rawls is a pretty good young player. They kind of knew in the summer that they thought this kid was going to be really good. And that was a pure guess because it was just a college resume. But he is. So I don't think Marshawn would be disruptive. And I think that's your question.
You know, can we give a little credit to Tom Cable? Look, I know yes. The offensive line struggles with pass protection, but they don't struggle with run blocking. And I think they've done a good job of converting some of those D linemen to offensive linemen and then teaching them those techniques. And yeah, maybe it'd be more of an issue because they can't pass protect quite as well and they haven't figured out that art. It'd be more of an issue if they didn't have such an elusive quarterback. But I mean, look, they've got Russell Wilson. So they've got the ability to continue to let their offensive line's pass protection be a work in progress while they continue to improve in that realm, but just absolutely get better and better each week with run blocking. I mean, that's something that's really stood out to me. It doesn't matter if it's Marshawn Lynch or Thomas Rawls. They're going to have production because they've got guys who are helping to pave holes for them.
Yeah, and Brady, you know, I'm going to break him down this week for my after further review. I can't wait to dive in and watch him play compared to what he was doing early in the year, but he looks like he's staying in the pocket. And Pat, it looks like they're allowing him to play faster and looser almost as a pocket passer than he has at any point in his career. And by that I mean not as much read option, more, you know, standing there, spread the field, and let him throw the football. Is that something they wanted to do?
Well, they tried to do it after the first Super Bowl, if you recall. that September after the Super Bowl win, there was a lot of passing, and they retreated from it. And I asked Pete about it, and he said, you know, we're going too fast. We're trying to put more stuff in, and we're better off going back to what we were and then slowly getting into more stuff. So spin it forward a year and a half later, and they're moving into that area. Now, here's what Pete always says about him. This is right to you, Brady. He goes, Russell's greatest strength is his ability to self-correct. He watched himself on tape earlier this year. And yes, there were offensive line issues all over the place, but he was able to decipher the offensive line issue from him taking off too quick and bailing before he had to. And we all have that in us, you know, nervous feet, you want to get going. And he basically corrected that, which is the biggest tribute you can give a person. I wish I was able to self-correct my golf swing in the middle of a match, but that's what the guy was able to do. Okay, these five were the O-line's protection issues. These two were the receivers running their ass. But here's five where I left too soon. The receivers were good. The line was good. I'm going to fix those. And that's what he's done.
Yeah, and just from spending time with him back in 2013, the entire offseason and in training camp, you know, Pete, it's hard for me ever to ever say a bad thing about the guy because I was right there with him every step of the way with his mental prep and working out all the stuff he does to prepare his body and his mind. And Pat, that was one of the things I noticed was he could take criticism. He could critique himself. He would ask me, what do you see here? And we would talk about that because he knew I was a different quarterback than he was. So he wanted to hear like, well, you're more of a pocket passer. So how do you view this? And I would say to him, well, Russ, I think you got to hang in the pocket or you got to anticipate this better. And you got to try to feel more comfortable with throwing this ball before he gets out of his break or before, you know, the rush just ends up getting to you or before you even have to move. And so you would have those conversations in the film room and, you know, he would listen. He'd nod his head. He'd write down notes, always taking down notes and continually, you know, getting cut-ups of himself where he could try to make the little changes or look at the timing of certain routes and seeing how he could improve to get that football in there. I bet he's watched that Super Bowl play 1,000 times and tried to figure out ways of how he either quickening up his footwork, you know, figure out a way to get his hand on the laces quicker to try to get the football out more accurately or however he's going about doing it. He is incredible at preparing and then finding ways to fix whatever issues he feels he may have.
You know, and Pat, you mentioned something, and that's a pet peeve of mine, and I've said it many a time that I thought that was a flaw in his game, his, you know, leaving the pocket way too quickly, and I know why it happens, but it's always been something that he's done that I think was a problem for him. But the last 3 weeks, like you said, he's fixed it. He's not doing it anymore. I can't wait to dive in to see a guy who's playing quarterback from the pocket, making good reads and making good throws and staying there and making them.
Hey, and I'll throw the other piece of, you know, that's part of this big equation, the emergence of the Tyler Lockett. Another guy for him that he trusts. And I watched Rawls, and you know that offense, Brady, you were out there. I watched Rawls yesterday after a play action fakes. He basically slid over to outside the numbers and stood there. He knew if he was going to scramble that way, that's his bailout guy. It's a little more than a check down. It's kind of like a parachute, but I was impressed with Rawls understanding what his role was going to be as a fourth phase of a passing attack, and he hit him twice with it. And I know that's tough for a young receiver and a quarterback. You know, you kind of don't think you're ever getting to the fourth guy, but he was reading to the right side. He was in trouble. He went back to left, and he didn't want to leave the pocket, and there was Rawls sitting there as his parachute. And I just thought that was another dimension that, you know, I knew Marshawn could do it, but I didn't know that Rawls was up to figuring out how to be that guy.
Brady, while we're talking about quarterbacks, and your first name is Brady, let's go to this guy with the last name Brady, Tom Brady. The Patriots have lost two consecutive games. Now, I know he doesn't have his weapons, and Gronk didn't play and everything, but is there cause for concern in New England right now?
I don't think there's any cause for concern. If there was, it'd probably be on the side of the special teams. I mean, you go back to the last week's loss versus the Philadelphia Eagles. To me, it all comes down to maybe the Patriots not necessarily taking the Philadelphia Eagles as seriously as they should have. You know, they score. There was that corner route to Danny Amendola in the corner of the end zone. They went up 14-0. they come right back and kick that little like pooch kick that Philadelphia recovered. They had great field position. You know, clearly they weren't caught off guard, and Sam Bradford drove him right down, threw a touchdown pass to Zach Ertz to make it 14-7. That, to me, ended up being kind of the difference in the game. Like, all of a sudden, the New England Patriots, who are down all these weapons on offense, weren't necessarily playing their normal, you know, field position battle. Take care of the football, don't hurt yourselves, or don't beat yourselves. And then it ended up being special teams play along the way. Obviously, an interception return for a touchdown as well, but a blocked punt. All those sorts of things ended up becoming a part of that. And I really felt like it was the special teams that let them down. I mean, obviously not Tom Brady or anything with the offense.
That was a stupid decision by Bill Belichick, by the way.
Well, the coaches sometimes, and he's the best, but I think the first thing I'd say to myself is, why did he think we should drop kick this surprise onside kick thing? Why? So part of the answer in my mind is that he knew he didn't have all the firepower, that he was going to have some issues as the game went on, and that he didn't think 14-0 was going to be a big enough lead. Otherwise, why do you do it? That'd be the first thing I'd put on the
table
for discussion.
Too cute. He got too cute. Is it coach overthinking it and getting too cute? That's what he did it.
Well, the other piece I'll say is, and Brady should comment on this, although he never got stuck having to play a lot of special teams. This time of year, you look at teams that have a lot of injuries, a la New England, and all those backups that are core special teamers are now invading the starting lineup and role-playing. I remember having to bring in a couple of young guys to my office and go, look, you're still on special teams, dude. You just because we're playing you more, you better not neglect it. And I almost always did it because the special teams coach would be going, the damn kid was never late for a meeting. Now he's late all the time because he's down in his new position coach's meetings. It is a problem when young guys who were pure back, you know, special guys are now playing more and not giving full effort to the teams. And I'm not talking about effort physically. I'm talking about mental effort.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the hardest thing about those guys in the back end trying to make the roster, right? I mean, they've got to figure out a way to be able to play at a high level on defense and on special teams still when they're called to, you know, make that their duty.
Yeah, I think, you know, look, they're gonna be right back in the middle of it. But right now, you know, I mean, if the playoffs started today, they'd be the number three seed in the AFC. Can either one of you go on a limb and say that Cincinnati might be the best team in the AFC?
Well, I'm going to pick Pittsburgh to beat them, which I already did this morning. My question to myself is, are they capable of getting back to the one seed? Because if they're not, then they're going to have some problems along the way here. They need to be in Foxborough to get to the Super Bowl, in my opinion. Not because Brady can play anywhere. It's the rest of them.
I'd say that's a fair assessment. I mean, I think when you look at the difference between the Bengals and the Patriots, besides really Gronkowski, who I'm going to give him the edge over Eifert as far as, you know, being the best tight end in the league. But Eifert's pretty close the way he's played this year. But then you look at the rest of the weapons that I think the Bengals have. I mean, they've got more talent. So then it comes down to, you know, which team's going to be able to execute at a higher level. And that's clearly been the Patriots for a number of years, a number of times. So, you know, maybe that outweighs the whole talent issue for the Bengals if they can't figure out a way to put it all together in the playoffs finally. But lastly, I mean, home field advantage, I would say as a former player, I always felt like it was much more difficult going to Foxborough to try to get a win as opposed to Cincinnati, even though we didn't have, you know, good success going to Cincinnati and getting wins. I just feel like the overall environment up there in New England, the things that happen, you know, the headsets going down on third down all the time, the things like that you have to kind of endure, I think that's all part of it. And it just, I mean, they play that much better at home as well.
We were talking today on the previews, Pat, about the young quarterbacks and how this league is set in a lot of spots. There are really, when you think about it, there are the three from last year and the two from this year. You got, you know, Bortles, Carr, Bridgewater, who's not playing very well, by the way, and then Mariota and Winston. Rank each of you guys, rank them in the order how you would see them right now as a quarterback.
I mean, if I had a chance to
take
them,
one. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. You're talking Bortles. I just want to make sure I have the right list. Bortles, Mariota, Winston, Carr, and Bridgewater.
Yes.
Yeah, I would probably take Mariota first.
Okay.
And then Winston, and then Carr, Bortles, Bridgewater.
Brady?
I think I'm going to start with Derek Carr first. And I think just the progress from even his rookie year to this year, I mean, he's putting up 3,000 yards, 20 touchdown passes, and back-to-back season almost. I mean, it's incredible to see what he's been able to do with a team last year who didn't have a ton of talent. This year, now that he does, I mean, you could make the case that they're still in the hunt for the playoffs. I would put Bridgewater at the end. I think he's been somewhat disappointing this year. And then I've kind of got – I think Marcus Mariota and Jameis Winston are right there, kind of at that number two spot. I'll put them at tied, and I'll put Bortles at four. And I just think I'm giving Winston and Mariota the edge because they're already showing so much growth just in their rookie year from the beginning – you know, as we move towards the last quarter of the season, I mean, you could just see it. And even Jameis Winston, one thing that I think I was like questioning was, you know, at times his feet seem lazy. Like it doesn't feel like he has the urgency in his footwork sometimes to flip around and make throws. Well, I'll tell you what, I watched him make a pass this past week where he had a guy kind of wrapping around on a stunt. He was going to get a free shot at him. Jameis Winston knew it was coming. He hung in there. And he literally went from number two to number three in his progression, and he buzzed those feet right around to get him set and got the throw off, got the completion, took the shot, moved the change, and moved downfield. I was sitting there saying to myself, holy cow, man, this kid's going to be very, very, very good in the near future if he continues to progress at this rate.
See, I have a hard time. I put Bridgewater right now at the bottom. I agree with Brady on that one, I think, and you, Pat. I have a hard time with the rest of them. I really do because I think they're all really good. I personally probably put Bortles number one. I would. I think. Don't laugh because I think he's the gunslinger of the group.
Oh, stop! It's the hometown season. That you
no,
got going on.
He's the gunslinger of the group. I probably put him number one. Carr number two. Winston number three, and Mariota would be number four for me. That's probably how I would rank it. I like Winston more than Mariota coming out. That kind of stays that way. But I don't think, to be honest with you, the top four guys, I have a hard time picking between them. I'll be honest with you. I really do. That's how good I think they all are.
Since we all agreed on the bottom, the question for all of us becomes, does Minnesota see it that way? Is Minnesota thinking we got the wrong guy if we're trying to get to the Super Bowl? Or are they patient here and think he's just in development and it's okay that he's not up to par with the other guys? How do you think Minnesota's looking at this?
I personally feel like they're looking at it saying we need to get him a wide receiver because Mike Wallace isn't panning out. Stephon Diggs has kind of emerged, but they need to get him one of those big bodied wide receivers like back when they had Sidney Rice or someone of that stature or size to kind of give them one of those guys that regardless of the coverage, you can throw up a ball and he can go make a play and get you a first down or get you a touchdown. They don't really have anyone like that to me right now that I feel like they can rely on 100% of the time to take those shots at and being able to come down with a high percentage of completions. And that's where I feel like it's partly that. Maybe also it's not even anything to do with Teddy Bridgewater. Maybe it's North Turner. I mean, is there possibly a question that maybe the system's kind of running old and getting old right now? I mean, I know they were missing a bunch of pieces on defense last week versus Seattle, but I mean, they didn't even have a chance and they couldn't run the football. I mean, it looked like it was a struggle for everyone on the offensive side of the ball last week.
I'm going to take a typical Pete Prisco view on it, okay? Teddy Bridgewater was significantly better as a rookie because they weren't run heavy like they are now. And I love Adrian Peterson. I think he's a great player. And Brady, you guys will both probably disagree with me that should be taking the pressure off the quarterback. But I think they've gotten back so far to being a run-heavy team, and understandably so, the guy's a great player, that it's taken a little bit of what Teddy Bridgewater did last year when he didn't have that and was forced to play at a different style. And I think that's hurt him a little bit.
Well, I just always felt that AP behind him was going to give him the first down passing looks that are ideal for high percentage, successful passing game. Adrian Peterson, everyone's going to play the extra guy in the box. What you're in is six-man configuration, they got seven. You're in a seven, they got eight. that he'd get what he wanted, but I just don't see the guy delivering it. Now, he does have some elusiveness to it, and this is the third team to think Mike Wallace is going to bail him out. So maybe Brady's point about getting the right target and the right guy, would you put, make it a veteran, Brady? Would you make it a high-priced rookie? How do you see filling that role to give this guy that player?
Well, and that's the thing is, I don't know if you try to build it through the draft. You know, the first big body guy that can stretch the field and run some different routes, I guess he also wears purple, is Josh Dotson for TCU. He's the first guy that comes to mind that if I'm Minnesota and I'm looking for a guy, I mean, depending on what he runs in the 40 and looks at how he looks at the combine and all that, that might be a guy that I'm circled and saying, all right, let's try to maybe get Teddy Bridgewater an early Christmas gift in the draft next year and get him a big, tall stud wide receiver that he can continue to grow and build with. I mean, we're seeing how that's worked out for Derek Carr, right, with Amari Cooper. And now they just kind of, you know, gave him two with bringing in Michael Crabtree and seeing how that's working out. So maybe that's the route they go. Maybe they get a guy who they want to try to not resurrect his career, because I don't think Michael Crabtree was there, but, you know, a veteran guy who's looking to prove himself, who really wants to come into a system then and work with a young emerging quarterback with a guy like Bridgewater, and you bring in a veteran like that and you draft a guy.
Well, I know we got to get out of here early today because we got some other obligations, but Brady, one last thing. Every time I go to Minnesota and I see Cordarrelle Patterson walking around and I look at him and I go, oh my God, he's a huge guy. He can run. He's physical and everything. That's the guy he should be doing that. You know, that's the scary thing. That kid has all the tools in the world. He just doesn't put the work in or doesn't pick up the playbook or whatever, but that's the guy you're talking about right there.
Yeah, and everything I hear is just they've been disappointed early on with his preparation. I mean, you said it. He's got every physical ability there needs to be, but it's just not clicking. For whatever reason, not seeing the coverages and adjusting his routes, not seeing some of these things, and it's not like North Turner's offense is simple. I mean, I've talked to different quarterbacks who've been in his system where, you know, they'll go into the game with 150, 200 plays, and that still isn't enough. All of a sudden, they'll be calling a play that they didn't even put in their game plan that they ran 4 weeks ago on, you know, at halftime or in the second quarter where they want to make this adjustment and use this play. And that's just kind of his style and how he works.
All right, fellas, we got to run out of here because I know Brady's got to do some stuff and I got to do some stuff and you got to do some stuff, Pat. But next Monday, we'll be right back smack dab here doing it all over again.
Can't wait. Have a great day, fellas. Thanks for having me here. It was terrific.
You got it.